Welcome to Asia Calling, your window on Asia. Coming up on the show this week, we take a ride through Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, where we get a taste for how the country's tumultuous past has made its mark. With transportation and infrastructure lacking, and population now booming, it's time to rebuild vital services. And in South Korea, ideas about racial purity are being challenged as the country's first black model rises to fame. We also meet Indonesia's up-and-coming metal band, an unlikely trio of headscarved teenage girls who are finding their voice through music. Thanks for tuning into the show. I'm Nicole Kirby. When you think of countries that are known for their racial diversity, South Korea might not spring to mind. A decade ago, textbooks there praised the so-called pure blood of its people, and many took pride in this supposed racial homogeneity. But immigration is changing things. By 2020, around 300,000 Koreans will be from diverse ethnic backgrounds. One of them is a teenager named Han Hyun Min, and he's challenging the idea of what it means to look Korean. Jason Strother has this story from Seoul.
At age 16, Han Hyun Min is already a veteran of the catwalk. At the recent Seoul Fashion Week, Han confidently strutted down the runway wearing ripped jeans and a puffy vest. He faced the row of photographers, gazed into their flashing lights, and pivoted back around. Han has a unique look, and he's quickly rising as a model. He's tall, slim, and black. But his appearance also alienates him. Han tells me that backstage, some models don't talk to him because they assume he can't speak Korean.
어려운 점은 일단은 잘 한국말을 못하는 줄 알고.
It's understandable that people think I'm a foreigner or talk to me in English when they first meet me. I know I seem really different from Koreans until I start talking.
말 걸어주면서 한국말 하는 거 보고 신기해서.
Han is Korea's first black model and only speaks Korean. He's the son of a Nigerian immigrant and a Korean mother, but Han says he doesn't know much about Africa and has no connection with family there. He's spent his whole life in Korea, and he's just as Korean as anyone else. But that doesn't stop others from teasing him about his looks.
그냥 뭐, 너는 엄마가 한국 사람인데 피부가 까매 이런 거다던가 아니면은.
They said things like you have a Korean mother, so why are you black?
안 좋게 말하면
I felt they were really disgusted by me.
Han doesn't dwell on those memories and writes off the bullying as just kids being kids. But he acknowledges that if your skin is a different color, life isn't easy in Korea. There's a stigma about being biracial here because in the past, many of these children were born out of liaisons between U.S. soldiers and Korean sex workers. Thousands were sent overseas for adoption, but advocates say for those who stayed in South Korea, they face severe discrimination at school and at work. Michael Hurt is the son of an African-American veteran and Korean mother, and he lectures in visual sociology at Yonsei University in Seoul. He says Korean children with a black parent experienced much worse treatment than those with a white parent.
Basically, if you had a black parent, you're generally lower on the totem pole because you have darker skin. In Korean culture, dark skin, association with workers, right, lower classes.
Hurt says model Han Hyun Min isn't the first black Korean to achieve celebrity. He points out that the singer, In Suni, has been popular for decades here, but that hasn't led to acceptance of racial diversity.
I'm glad for this kid. I'm glad there's this kind of room for people like this to be out there. But at the same time, doesn't mean people necessarily change their views of race or the place... There are hierarchies that takes place in people's heads.
Modeling presents its own challenges for Han Hyun Min. His makeup artist tells me that it's impossible to buy cosmetics for him in South Korea. Most models want to look more white. But Han doesn't seem bothered. He says support is flowing in from fans.
Yeah, I got a lot of messages. Some people tell me that I look awesome. I have some Nigerian fans too, and they say they are so proud of me because I'm half Nigerian.
I ask Han if he's a role model for racial diversity in Korea. He says that's still a long way off. So I ask him about a more immediate concern.
Do you have a girlfriend these days?
No, I don't have one.
How is that possible?
I'm not that popular. I don't think I look so handsome, and I don't think girls are really into me.
You're being modest.
Han says for now, he just wants to focus on his modeling career, and he's looking forward to getting back on the runway. For Asia Calling, I'm Jason Strother in Seoul.
In Indonesia, the metal band Voice of Bacaprot has gone viral. They're three hijab-wearing teenage girls from a small Javanese village. They've got mean guitar skills and they're making noise in ways that a lot of people think they shouldn't. I caught up with them in Jakarta. Siti, Widi and Ferda are petite, but the sound of their band, Voice of Bacaprot, is huge. When I met them, the three girls were dressed entirely in black, from headscarves to sneakers, the tips of their fingers blue and scratched from hours spent practicing guitar. This is their first time in a radio studio. They cling to each other, cuddling. Widi is 15 and the youngest. She giggles and shies away, hiding behind the others.
Deg-degan juga. Deg-degan. Apalagi nanti malam kan.
Today, they're getting ready to play alongside Superman Is Dead, one of Indonesia's biggest bands, in front of an audience of thousands. And they're nervous.
Superman Is Dead.
Going out to Fiobi. Fiobi crew.
The young band has had a rapid rise to fame. So much so that they tell me they're reading books on emotional intelligence to try and stay balanced throughout the head-spinning experience. Singer Ferda Kunia is 16 years old, and as the oldest of the three, she's become spokeswoman. She says it hasn't been a smooth ride.
At first, our closest family members didn't support us because maybe they didn't know what we were doing. And this music is always identified with promiscuity. But once they knew what we're doing, what our activities are like, they started to support us.
Every day after school, the girls meet and practice for 3 hours. And their dedication is paying off. Voice of Bacaprot has fans across Indonesia and around the world, from England to Australia. But it's not only fans that have noticed them. The band has plenty of loud and aggressive critics, threatening them at home and on social media.
There are some people who hate and slander us. They say metal is inappropriate and it's inconsistent with us wearing the hijab because metal is considered dark music, satanic music. But through our songs, we can prove that we can play metal music without abandoning our responsibilities as Muslim women who have to cover our bodies.
Some metal music is nihilistic and dark. That's the music that the three girls fell in love with when they first heard it. And they've learned a lot from metal bands like Slipknot, Metallica, and System of a Down, including how to use music as a means to express social commentary. But unlike the others, Voice of Pachuprot is unapologetically idealistic.
Ada berbagai pesan yang ingin kami sampaikan gitu di sana.
We want to share our message with people from all walks of life. Most of our songs include social criticism.
Dan banyak lagu kami juga berisi tentang kritik-kritik sosial gitu.
With intolerance on the rise in Indonesia, their message is one of hope. They have 4 original songs, and Ferda told me about one of them.
Itu judulnya What's the Holly Today? Jadi,
it's called What's the Holly Today? These days, more people feel that they're right. Jadi, everyone else is wrong. Gitu, a sense of egoism. It's become hard to find tolerance. Jadi, so through that song, we want to make a statement about peace and tolerance.
Susah ditemukan, gitu.
When they're not playing music, the 3 girls are finishing their final years of school. They're at a secretarial school, but they tell me that's not the future they're hoping for. They'd prefer to hurt their fingers playing guitar rather than from typing memos. So they're setting their sights big.
First, we want to make an album that can publish in Indonesia and abroad. We also want to perform abroad, in the UK, big festivals abroad, America, Australia, a lot of countries.
Punya cita-cita perform di luar negeri gitu, di negara mana pun.
Ferda says they're determined to keep doing what they love, and they've got a message for other women.
Jangan takut buat tampil beda gitu. Tetap percaya diri tampil beda. Gitu.
Do not be afraid to be different. Stay confident, look different, voice your idealism, and keep your idealism. Mereka, and of course, Muslim women today are underestimated. We want to break that perception.
Muslimah kayak kami juga bisa berkarya gitu.
Muslim women like us can also work and have ideals, and no one can stop that.
For Asia Calling, I'm Nicole Kirby in Jakarta. You're listening to Asia Calling KBR. Afghanistan's capital, Kabul, is one of the world's fastest growing cities. New houses and markets are popping up all over the place, and streets are becoming more crowded by the day. But with a desperate lack of infrastructure, the city is struggling to keep up with its own growth. In a long-awaited development, work has just started on a metro bus service, which will become Kabul's only form of public transport. Shadi Khan Saif takes us on a trip through the streets of Kabul to find out more.
The Deh Afghan, or the village of the Afghans, is literally the center of Kabul. From here, you can travel to all 4 corners of the city. But don't wait for any bus or any other mass public transport. It is the private cars, mostly old models of Toyota Corolla, that would ferry you on the chaotic roads.
Just a few decades ago, Kabul was a small city of a few thousand people. Now it's a bustling metropolis of millions. But getting around the city isn't easy. There is literally no public transport in Kabul. Most people get around the city in cars and taxis. It's noisy. There are bottlenecks on every corner. And air pollution is suffocating. There are no buses, trams or trains, but you can still find a horse and cart to get you where you want to go. Like generations of his family before him, Muhammad Mail works as a coachman in Kabul, but he says his time may be coming to an end.
I've been in this profession for the past 10 years, but horse and carts are out of fashion now. Not many are left in the city, only around 20 horse and carts are left.
Electric trams once sped all over downtown Kabul, but that's just a distant memory now. a reminder of the time before Soviet invasion and the civil war of the 1990s that left the city decimated.
This is the township of Bagrami in eastern Kabul. Before the Soviet invasion and subsequent rages of war, Bagrami was the last stop of Kabul's pioneering tram service. There is no trace of it left now.
In recent years, life in the capital has become relatively more peaceful. Hundreds of thousands of refugees have been repatriated, and the city is beginning to thrive once more. According to official estimates, Kabul now has a population of 4.6 million, but unofficial estimates put it around 6 million. Quick growth has come at a cost, though. There's immense pressure on public services, which are in an appalling state after years of conflict. Transportation is a major problem. But last month, residents welcomed a long-awaited announcement from Kabul Mayor Abdullah Habibzai.
It is a moment of pride for all. A historic day today. We have launched work on pioneering metro bus in Kabul. And next year, we will have the first metro bus service in the city.
Kabul municipality will award 16 contracts to construct 285 kilometers of new roads throughout the city. But some Kabul residents, like 22-year-old university student Mehram Mohammadi, are cautiously optimistic, aware this is just the beginning.
There has been some improvement. We have witnessed development of some new roads, but honestly, the government and Kabul residents need to learn and do a lot to improve the city's transport system.
As foreign troops exit the country, support for Afghanistan's aid-addicted economy is dwindling. Streamlining public transport and other infrastructure is a crucial step as the country moves towards greater self-reliance. For Asia Calling, this is Shadi Khan Saif in Kabul, Afghanistan.
Finally, we return to one of our most popular features. Our online audience has loved this story, and so we're bringing it back for radio. It's about a film that featured street girls as actors, and it took out the award for Best Actress at the Mindanao Film Festival in Davao, the Southern Philippines, last year. Titled Panon, the film is inspired by true events from the year 2002, following a bloody clash between all-girl gangs. Panon also highlights the root causes of juvenile crime, as well as justice and rehabilitation. Madonna Varola and Marielle Gadiola have this report from Davao City.
That's the main character of the film Kakay. When she was 17, Kakay stabbed and killed Intik, a member of a rival gang called Warshak. Here she is in the film seeking forgiveness from the victim's mother. This scene is among the highlights from the 20-minute film shown last month at the 12th Mindanao Film Festival in President Rodrigo Duterte's hometown of Davao. Kakay's character is based on real-life events, although the names have been changed. In the early 1990s to 2000s, street gangs, usually composed of minors, often got caught up in violent clashes in Davao. Social worker Carla Canarias handles the case of the character the film is based on. and says if you dig deeper into the issues around juvenile crime, abuse often springs from abuse.
I learned she used to be hung upside down inside the sack and beaten up very often. I met her first during her brother's funeral. He was also a victim of gang wars. Kakai wandered around to hunt for her brother's killer and also became involved in an all-girl gang. She was a survivor of a riot when she was stabbed and almost died. She also experienced sexual abuse in the gangster environment.
Lead actress Laura Parapina played Kakai in the film and was awarded Best Actress at the event, which this year carried the theme Cinema of Change. Growing up, Laura had a similar experience with gangs. Most people, she says, are quick to dismiss rather than try and understand why young people get involved in crime.
They have no idea why we became this way. I hope they won't judge us because it hurts. To fellow youth like us, take this negative perception as a challenge. Show them that they are wrong, that they have a bright future ahead.
And that is the core message of the film, explains Joyce Penales from the Tambayan Center for Children's Rights, a local NGO that was involved in the production of the film. Penales explains how the idea of the film started.
We first came up with the idea for the film, and then we had script writing and auditions for the performers. Then we had meetings with the actors and the real-life gang members, especially the character of Kakai. They were very supportive.
The filmmakers were careful to protect those involved in the story. That included not revealing the identity of the real-life characters and refraining from having the children act out sensitive scenes. In real life, Kakai was released from jail after 3 years because of the Juvenile Justice and Welfare Act of 2006, which upholds the rights of the child.
It's not only 1 year, it will take many years.
But that was after months of intensive counseling, as well as meetings with social workers, police, and the victim's mother. This is part of the restorative justice process that is the framework for juvenile justice involving child and youth offenders in the Philippines. But as social worker Carla from Tambayan points out, youth acting out is usually indicative of deeper social problems.
Sinasabi ka namin sa, like, sa Tambayan karon na actually,
as we often say in Tambayan, the way children are only mirrors the bigger problems in society. They are not the reason. They're just the victims of our shortcomings as duty bearers and the government. Do we have programs, services, opportunities for them? And do these programs reach them?
For Asia Calling, this is Madonna Virola, reporting from the Philippines.
That's all for this edition of Asia Calling. Our program today was produced in the studios of Radio KBR in Jakarta, Indonesia. To find out more about our show, send us a message on our Asia Calling Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Asia Calling for more updates. You can now also podcast the show. Go to the iTunes Store or your podcasting app and search for Asia Calling and subscribe for free to the weekly episodes. I'm Nicole Kirby, back next week with more stories from Asia.
Set me free. You were the only one for me. precious moments gone. But I know that you're there. One day when heaven calls, I'll see you again. When heaven calls, I'll see you again.